Welcome, Teresa. Teresa is your right name, yeah?
Yes.
Sorry, right,
Yeah.
okay. This is Wednesday, November 8, 2023. My name is Vivek Luitel. I'm a doctoral student in education leadership at Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi. Today, I'm meeting with Ms. Teresa Garcia Ruiz, who has been gracious enough to grant me the time to be able to talk about her experiences and observations while associated with Corpus Christi State University and Texas A&M University Corpus Christi as a student in late 80s and early 90s, let's say. Yeah? So, Terry, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate you asking these questions.
Well, let's begin with, could you please tell me a little bit about yourself and your association with Corpus Christi State University and or Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi, as a student in early 90s?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am from Corpus Christi. This is my hometown. So the university has always had a place here. Back in those days, the university was known as Corpus Christi State University, and it was in upper division. Sophomores and freshmen and sophomores were not supported. I mean, they weren't taught that level here on this campus. So it was only juniors and seniors and graduate students. So it had a much lower profile in the community back then. I knew about it, but I never knew anybody that actually attended school here. When I was in high school in the late 80s, of course, that's when students start thinking about their options for going to college. And at the time, there was no four-year option here in Corpus Christi. So students would either have to plan to go to Del Mar for 2 years and then transfer to CCSU or leave town and go to a university somewhere else. So at the time, this would have been 1988, 89, there was a lawsuit going on with LULAC, and it was, I'm not sure who all, I think MALDEF was also involved in that lawsuit, to get more support for our university here, Corpus Christi State, which was part of the University System of South Texas. At the time, that included like the A&M system, but it was South Texas, which was CCSU, Laredo State, Pan Am University, and Texas A&I in Kingsville. So the resources that the state allocated for our system was much, much, much less than UT system, A&M system, U of H, or anybody else. So that was something that was being kind of fought over in the courts at the time, kind of in the background. Students who came of age during that time here, we knew there were changes going on, but it was not going to be in time for us. So we were kind of on the sidelines, but hopeful.
How many years did you study here in CCSU? How many years did you study?
Well, I left Corpus to go to school in another city as a four-year university, and I would come back home every summer and take classes here. The first 2 years, I took classes at Del Mar to transfer to my university. After my sophomore year, that summer, I wanted to take a class here at CCSU, but I was not able to because I only had 58 completed credit hours.
Okay.
And at the time, it was very strict. You had to have 60. So even though a three-hour summer class would have put me over that, I was not allowed to enroll here until I had actually 60 earned hours. So 58 wouldn't cut it. It was very the rules were enforced quite stringently. So, you know, so I went to Del Mar for another summer. So my first summer here, my first class would have been in 1991, in that summer. And it was a completely different university. I mean, it was here in the same place, but the feeling of it, the size was so much smaller. The students were all adults. You know, it was very different. So so that would have been my first semester here.
Okay, great. Well, what if you just flash back, you know, like a retrospective, and then mm-hmm. what kind of academic support was provided by departments and offices of the Corpus Christi State University? For example, library services or academic advising services, writing centers, or this kind of thing. So whether you also got those support and services, how do students, you know, take those services?
Right, right. That's a great question. At the time, I would say that the student support services, in that sense, like writing center and like we have CASA today, those did not exist. I mean, it was not... We didn't even have a concept that that was something that could exist, you know. Students went to college, you were kind of on your own. You had to figure things out yourself, work with the professors as you could. This was a commuting college, so
yeah.
There was no dorms. There was no, you know, everyone came here part-time. To my knowledge, nobody was a full-time student at the time. So it was a lot of adults that were taking night classes or something like that. So they probably, you know, wouldn't have had time to do like a writing center or tutorials and things like that. So it was kind of more of a sink or swim, you're on your own type of mentality as far as that kind of academic support. I don't remember meeting with an advisor at any point. We did our course registrations. You know, they used to come out with a booklet.
Mm-hmm.
You would see the courses that were coming up and mainly just talked with your college department, like faculty, for advising on what would fit into your degree or what classes you needed to take. And then we just went and signed up for them if they were open. So it was more of a direct self-directed.
Okay. Well, then let's have a look at some other aspects of student services. For
mm-hmm.
example, the financial services.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of financial services was provided to students, such as finding the scholarship or maybe completing the FAFSA or taking loans, you know, and any kind of aid options that a student may have? These kind of services were there at that time?
There was, of course, there was an Office of Financial Aid. All of these offices were in the Round Building, so it was very convenient to just go from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you went to get your student ID made, there was financial aid or scholarships. But really, I mean, the cost was so much less back then. And a lot of students were just self-funded. Or what was promoted more heavily back then was the payment plan. So you would sign up for your classes, and then you would go to the business office and set up a payment plan. So you would pay a certain amount, and then you would have payments throughout the semester. Not so much student loans. They were available, but mostly it was like if a student was taking two classes, it would have been maybe like, I don't know, less than, I mean, a full load of 15 was like less than $400 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, I have that. I have that information right here. See?
Oh, great.
And we can look at the cost, let's see, since you're asking about financial, the cost was how much? Ah, here we go. Okay, so for a long session. In 1989 to 91, 3-hour class cost $144. So, you know, you could make that in three payments, or 6 hours was less than 200. So, you know, the need for loans was, it really was something that you could pay yourself, but just in payments. It's about like financial literacy and that kind of thing. I don't remember anything like that. Finding scholarships, that there was an office. I don't think it was financial aid, but they did probably scholarships office, that they would help you apply for things like there was a Coca-Cola used to have a big Hispanic. Focus scholarship. I don't know if they still do, but the scholarships office here would try and connect students with where they could apply for scholarships, right? And then, of course, Pell Grants and things like that through the financial aid office. But, yeah.
Okay, good. Very, very good background and context. Well, let's talk about another very important aspect, that is career support. What kind of career support was provided by Career Center or campus? For example, was there support for the student to find the right career, or job search support, or internship, for example, or resume building, you know, this kind of workshop, interview preparation, and so career counseling. Was there this kind of services in those days?
I'm sure there was. I don't remember a big emphasis on it. I do remember seeing flyers around campus for, say, internship, like info meetings, or I really don't remember a lot of like career services kind of high profile presence. Again, a lot of the students were already employed. You know, they were working, so.
Yeah.
It was a different focus for them, I'm sure. But I don't remember. Now, this university did graduate BAs and bachelor's and BS, right? So I'm sure there was, but I was not ever in a 4-year program here. I did go through the College of Ed teacher prep program, and so they had their own kind of connections with the schools, and they would have career fair, like school career fair. So I'm more familiar with that. I know the College of Education did have that to help place students, new teachers. But as far as the overall college, like it does now, I don't remember that. That's not to say it wasn't there, but I just didn't know about it.
You're right, and it's based on the program offered that time, you know, like, of course, the education in the doctoral program. This EDD was the first doctoral program offered here in 1992 when I wrote through the document.
Yeah, that was after the time I was.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's talk another aspect of the services that provided to a student, that is. With the personal and social support provided by the campus, for example, in general counseling center, health center, or disability center, or these kind of things where people can get the support?
I want to say that there was a health center, but I never went there, so I don't know actually that there actually was one. Now, most of the students services were all held in the student center, which at the time was the Glasscock. Now where CASA is, that was the student center.
Oh, okay.
That's where the bookstore was, and a lot of the offices that worked with students were all in that. And a little like cafeteria where now, I don't even know if they use it anymore, but if you walk by Glasscock, you see there's kind of a like an open square where there's open outside area.
Yeah.
It used to be eating area there.
Oh,
for students would go eat. There was eating areas inside and outside where it was kind of had wood slat cover so you could get a little shade. It was very nice. And that they had in that Glasscock Student Center, there was also a big room with a big TV. You know, because back then, no cell phones, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They had a large TV, and students would just go in there and sit and watch whatever together. And so it was a nice way to spend time with your fellow students, and, you know, people would get together to watch certain programs that they would watch every week or whatever. So it was a nice
social kind of
experience. Now, I don't think they have that because everybody watches stuff on their phone or everyone's more into their own individual experience, but it was more of a communal experience back then.
Yeah.
So, but I don't remember us like a counseling center or anything like that. Again, not to say it wasn't there. I just wasn't aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't use it, but it was, the social and personal support would have been at the Glasscock Center, and it was always pleasant. It was a nice place to be. There was always activity, so I think that the university made it an effort to make that a place for students. Now, the library kind of serves like that. The current UC has that big open space, but it's not the same. That's more like an eating area.
Mm-hmm.
The old student center had places for students to just kind of be together, talk with each other. So I think kind of in society in general, that's not as common anymore. So it's unfortunate, but it was a very nice place to be.
Great, yeah. Because of technology and other kind of things, the whole things are changing, you know, like now it's been, we're talking about 30 years back things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, well, about services, what additional services, you mentioned earlier, there was not much more kind of student housing and other kind of things, but it's still...
Mm-hmm.
Other services like transportation services, how do people commute to be here? Was there the food bank or other kind of services, or child care, a veteran service, or international student services? And so could you please tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, these are really great questions. I don't, there was campus housing. There were two small dorms at the time, but very, very few students actually lived here.
Mm-hmm.
So mostly everybody lived wherever, whether they were local students or they maybe got an apartment somewhere. But I don't remember any kind of, the food bank, no. That's, I would almost tell you for sure, there was no, like, Izzy's food closet that they have now. No, that was not, there was nothing like that. Child care, no. Veteran services, I have no idea. I'm sure they probably did, but
yeah.
Not being a veteran myself,
yeah.
I don't remember that. And international students, I don't even know if we had international
that
students.
Time.
I mean, I don't remember any. That's
okay.
That's very interesting, but I'm sure there was some, but I don't remember, like we have International Student Week now, and where they have, there was nothing like that. So maybe we weren't on the map yet. But no, I maybe there were, but I didn't know about it. So housing services, I mean, just the small dorms that they had. Which are still on campus now, but
they're
the Driftwood and Sandpiper.
Yeah.
And I do remember seeing some students just hanging out there, you know, in their lawn chairs outside, watching the cars come and go.
Mm-hmm.
The overall vibe on campus was much more slow paced and relaxed than it is now, for sure.
Okay, well, then you have great experience of last 30 years to till date. What significant change that you see in those days and now? Could you please to share with us like a few aspects of significant changes that we observe?
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many changes. So many changes. It's hard to even know where to start, Vivek. I mean, if you let's start with the just adding freshmen and sophomores, mm-hmm. that completely changed the feel on campus. I mean, of course, it grew the campus a lot,
mm-hmm.
size-wise, because you had all these classes that you didn't need before. And the freshmen and sophomore students had different needs and interests.
Mm-hmm.
It was a different demographic completely. You know, your younger students getting started in life, whereas before it was more of your older students who were picking up a certification or coming back to college or, you know, had families of their own already. So there were different, a lot of things changed to serve the new younger traditional kind of students that we didn't have here before. Of course, there were more students not from Corpus,
mm-hmm.
which was unusual at the time. You know, with CCSU, it was more students from around here. And once it became a four-year university, it was more of a broader draw. And that also leads into it being incorporated into the A&M system, which that changed tremendously everything. During the transition, there was a lot of uncertainty. You know, going back, and I wouldn't go back too much farther because, you know, I know you have your focus here, but just the background of the whole lawsuit that was filed, and the purpose was to get more support for our university here and in South Texas, Laredo, and, you know, the Valley. The solution to break up the university system of South Texas and put the institutions in the already existing UT and A&M system
mm-hmm.
was not what was the original focus of that lawsuit. So, you know, you always wonder what could have happened or how things would have been different had the university system of South Texas survived and just been strengthened. We would have had a focus here in South Texas. Instead, these groups, these individual institutions were dispersed into other systems. So, you know, the focus was not on South Texas. We are part of the A&M system, but A&M system is all over Texas.
Exactly.
It's not focused on South Texas.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know that the true original desires were fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
It was a solution, but it wasn't the original goal. So with that in mind, once we became part of the A&M system, there was a transition period. So we were a CCSU for a couple more years as part of the, like this little book, it says here on the back,
oh, yeah.
a campus of
Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm. But we were still CCSU. So we had our own identity for a while. And during that time,
mm-hmm.
there was a lot of uncertainty
mm-hmm.
as to what it would mean to be part of the A&M system.
Yeah.
Would we lose our identity? What would it bring? What would we lose? That was the unknown. So it was kind of a lot of anxiety at the time. Some people wanted to accelerate their programs so they would graduate with a CCSU
okay.
diploma. Other people wanted to slow down and wait until after the transition. So. You know, there was just a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, now what we're 20, 30 years later. We can look back and see how some of our concerns were just kind of crazy. But others, you know, it has changed our identity. We are no longer CCSU. We no longer have Corpus Christi in our name. We are no longer an institution focused on this part of Texas. We are part of another system. So as far as our ability to do things, we have to have approval of the system. We're part of the system. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't have the answers. I think it's been positive in a lot of ways because, I mean, look around. This university has grown so much. But there's always that, I wonder what if we hadn't been, part of the A&M system, if we would have stayed with our university system of South Texas, we would have still grown with being a four-year university, even if we would have stayed Corpus Christi State as a four-year university. How would that have changed? I mean, we'll never know. But there was, you know, there's a lot of people still here that were from those days.
Yeah.
That are still fewer and fewer.
Yeah, fewer and fewer. Yeah.
But there are, you know, there's a lot of retirements going on. But there are still people here that, like myself, who work here that were students, or still some people who worked here back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a great place to be. It's a great place to work. It's a great place to study. You know, we'll just see what the future brings from here. We just hold on and just always hope for the best.
Okay, well then, is there any final remarks you would like to make? Because we're almost at the end of the conversation now.
Well, I wanted to just thank you, Vivek, for taking the time to ask these questions. And, you know, I have not thought about these days in a long time, thought about those days and how things have changed. But it's good to remember and to go back and see and think about what we thought about then. And, you know, a lot of people here in Corpus don't know all this history. They have no idea the history of this university, and I think in general this institution is less well known in town than, say, Del Mar. Most everybody knows about Del Mar, but there are still significant numbers of people that live here in Corpus that don't even know about this university.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really, I mean, it's described as the island university,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of isolates us from the rest of the city. So, you know, I would hope in the future that we are able to connect more closely with our local roots. You know, I don't know the numbers of students who go to school here or in one of the school districts from the Corpus area that actually come here. I don't know. Maybe it's a lot, but I know we have a lot of students from other areas, San Antonio, Austin, Houston, where they do have other options and they come here for whatever reason they come here. I mean, but we originally were designed to support our local students. So I would like to see more emphasis on that. You know, in now or in the future, to build up our Corpus Christi area,
mm-hmm.
and serve our students here. You know, we should be a destination. And you know, I didn't come here out of high school because I didn't have that option, but now there is the option. So that would be, you know, I would love to see more local students come here and to see this university more enmeshed in the regular life of this town. So, you know, but everything is a process.
Right.
So it's great to bring in people from other places, like yourself, you know, and all of our now international students and students from other parts of Texas and other parts of the country and the world. It really adds a lot to Corpus Christi. But we also have to bring our local people here
Exactly.
too, so you know, so they can meet you and just get to know the wider world. You know, this university is a connecting spot, and I'd like to just see it continue to grow.
Thank you very much, Terry, for your time and valuable conversation and these all information that you provided.
Yes, thank you, and you have a great afternoon.
Yes, thank you.